Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. Still in the strike, SAG did not come to an agreement. I'm sure we know that by now. So writers are back at work. Writers' rooms are being formed for some of the scripted shows. The late night series are all back and can have guests as long as they aren't talking about upcoming projects that are screen related, like Eric McCormick from Will and Grace is on Broadway right now, so he was just on one of them talking about that. Kathy Griffin was on Jimmy Kimmel talking about her stand-up. So we can have people on as long as they're talking about like books they wrote or stand-up they're doing and not about movies or TV shows that they have made. So that's fun. I don't know when the next time the Screen Actors Guild is going back to negotiations will be, but we'll see. And I mean, other than that, there was not a whole lot going on in the TV news cycle because there was just too much going on in the political news cycle. And I will let you do your own research on that. The one story that did catch my attention is about Brian Fuller, who, if you don't know him, you probably actually do know him. He created Hannibal on NBC, which has kind of a cult following. He also created Star Trek Discovery, which was on Paramount Plus and also has aired on CBS. He did a pilot of a reboot of The Munsters called Mockingbird Lane that aired on NBC around Halloween, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I want to say. And he's done a lot of retellings of stories. He started out working on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and then he did American Gods with Neil Gaiman on Stars. I think that might still be renewed or like coming back. I'm not entirely sure. I only watched season one and I hated it. And then he also has a new show coming out for Peacock that's currently in production or will be when it is allowed to be, called Crystal Lake. And it's a prequel to the Friday the 13th film series. So he's kind of like found his groove in that like horror fantasy genre, but also in retellings of things like Hannibal and Mockingbird Lane and Crystal Lake. You probably have seen or heard, at least heard of something he's done. And one of his other projects was a documentary series that aired last year and is still streaming now on Shudder and AMC Plus. And it was called Queer for Fear. And it was about how and why queer people kind of see themselves in horror so much, especially in the tropes of the horror genre, like werewolves and vampires and things like that. And I did not watch much of it because I only had Shudder for 30 days, I think. No, I had it for 3 months because I watched all of Dracula. Regardless, the point being, at the time, it's because it was on during Countdown to Christmas. That's why. Like, that's when I had Shudder. I was focused on Dracula, was the only thing I watched on Shudder. And then I was focused on Hallmark. But regardless, I had meant to watch this. I have friends who watched it and enjoyed it. And one of the director producers of Queer for Fear is suing Brian Fuller, who did Hannibal and American Gods. Oh, he also did Pushing Daisies, which I loved and a lot of people loved as like a cult favorite with Lee Pace and Kristen Chenoweth. He's suing Brian Fuller and AMC Network Shudder and the producer, Stacey House, I think her name is, of Queer for Fear for sexual assault, harassment, and retaliation, alleging that he was fired for reporting this sexual harassment and actually looked at the filing. And I mean, we hear about suits like this all the time. There's another one that's literally currently happening. It was filed over a year ago, but just got pressed this week because the producer of Love is Blind, which who was being sued on Netflix, finally spoke about it, where like a woman who was on the show is alleging that they what's the term for it, that they basically kidnapped her. What's the name for it when they hold you against your will? I forget. But regardless, she's alleging that they held her against her will because they sequestered her as they were filming the show, which was a COVID precaution. and that she was like under 24-hour surveillance. But then she says that there were times when they had to go to set to be filmed. So it's unclear how she thinks they were under surveillance, but also had to go places to film. Like, I understand if you're on Big Brother, yes, that is 24-hour surveillance. But like, anyway, that she's alleging that she's under 24-hour surveillance, except for this one time when she was sexually assaulted by the person on the show who she was supposed to be engaged to. I don't really know how that show works. But regardless, that's another one that when you read it, it's like, well, this, okay, I get what you're saying, but this part of this seems like it could be legit, and part of it also seems completely insane. Like, oh God, what's the term that they like, that they were holding her against her will? That's what it means. And it has flown out of my head. But anyway, that like that part of it is kind of insane, especially because as the producer has said this week, that like there are several people who just quit. They're not holding you there. You can leave. anyway, so we see a lot of kind of frivolous lawsuits like this, or lawsuits where it's filed to make a complaint or judgment seem more legit than if someone just like went on social media and said, I was harassed, or this terrible thing happened to me at work and a hostile work environment was created. That it's kind of like a way of saying, well, you went out of your way to hire and pay for an attorney. So it kind of legitimizes these claims, even when they maybe have no actual legal merit, or there's no legal recourse for what can be done about some of these things. Like, I'm just thinking one that comes to mind for me personally, and people may have their own feelings about this, is the Lizzo lawsuit from earlier in the summer, where some of her dancers were alleging that they were like sexually harassed, and again, another hostile work environment. But then others on the same tour are like, there's nothing hostile about this work environment. And also, you're suing Lizzo when you should be suing this. But like, if this is the person who made you uncomfortable, sue that person. But, you know, that we see a lot of suits like this, and like 9 times out of 10, nothing ever happens with them. But this one, the Brian Fuller one, coming back around, what I found interesting is not necessarily the details, which like they're kind of gross, kind of weird. Like, the Sam Weinman is the name of the producer who is suing Brian Fuller, the producing company and the producer of the project Queer for Fear. And one of the things he's suing for is sexual assault, saying that Brian Fuller said that he was going to give Sam a back massage or crack his back, and it was so that he could press his penis up against Sam's back. And like, okay, that is perhaps unwanted touching, but like, also, if you're agreeing to get your back cracked, you kind of understand that that means that his front is going to be pushed into your back. So again, the more legitimate part of this complaint is that Brian was, or Mr. Fuller, as he is called in the complaint, Mr. Fuller had a preoccupation with sex and jerking off in particular, that he would go around and talk about like all these actors and films that he quote unquote masturbated so much to, and how he would quote wank it to adult child power dynamics in stories, weird, and that he would say like, oh, you need to watch this film with quote a box of tissues and lotion because it's gonna make you horny, and like weird shit, right? And then the Sam Weinman has text messages where he's being called a cunt, asked if he's being flashed by someone who they're saying is a quote disgraced producer. I have my guesses of who that could be. Giving details in these text messages of the last time Brian Fuller quote got fucked, that like he would go into Brian Fuller's office and there would just be wadded up tissues on the desk next to bottles of lotion, either as a joke to imply that he was jerking off or that he actually had jerked off. Like, kind of weird Louis C.K. shit, only didn't take it obviously as far as Louis C.K. did, where he like actually pulled it out and jerked it off in front of women. But like all, like a weird preoccupation with masturbating, and then also like verbal harassment, saying that he called Sam Wyman an asshole, told him that if he didn't have to leave the room to go to the bathroom, he could pee in the sink. That he would yell at him until he cried, said that he was weak, had no charisma, that he was, quote, drier than NPR. That's mean, but also, sorry, funny. Not funny in context, just like that's a funny insult. And then I guess after a while, Sam Wyman went to the producers about this, and the producer allegedly said that Brian is the money and we have to keep the money happy. So in retaliation for this, there was a lot of reshoots and people were replaced quite often. And after he had told the producing company and the producer about this harassment, this preoccupation with sex, this discomfort that he felt, he was fired. And when this lawsuit came out, and then his name was removed entirely. He did all this work for the show, and then it was removed entirely. And then when this lawsuit came out, Brian Fuller's lawyer said that they were preparing a defamation of character lawsuit against Sam Wyman, that they were going to sue him into the ground, like all this, you know, her crazy shit that is meant to make Sam Wyman, who is not as much of a name, obviously, as Brian Fuller is, does not have the power or history in these power dynamics and in production and everything to be, as the producer of Queer for Fear said, quote, the money. It's meant to like scare them and to make them back down and to withdraw or whatever. But okay, here's what I found interesting about all of that is two people came forward on Twitter to support Sam Wyman. One of them's name is Jordan Cruciola, and I'm unsure of pronouns, said on Twitter, I was an associate producer on Queer for Fear before my name was taken off the credits for several months in 2021, and I was present for or told in real time about what is alleged against Brian Fuller in this lawsuit. Make no mistake, all of the timestamped text messages exchanged between me and Sam for months during production of the docuseries will prove more than sufficiently that we discussed Fuller's conduct as it happened constantly. Now, this is not proof that the harassment happened, but one of the things that Brian Fuller's legal team said was that Sam Wyman, quote, created this fictitious story long after his gross incompetence necessitated his firing. And Jordan Cruciola was saying, this is not true. We talked about it as it was happening. This was not fabricated, especially not long after, quote unquote, the fact. And then she also, as she mentioned, was removed as an associate producer. So they're removing Sam as a producer, this person as an associate producer. And then another person, Andrew Scott Bell, said, I worked on Queer for Fear when it was only a feature film and scored the entire series, all of which was removed from the final production. I heard from Sam in real time as these things happened to him. I stand firmly beside my friend and collaborator. We have to stand up to the monsters. So this is now a third person whose work was completed and entirely removed. And it doesn't seem coincidental that all of these people were around for, present for, talking about this alleged harassment from Brian Fuller. That's what I found interesting, that like, it kind of legitimizes Wyman's claims, I would think, that people that he was talking to at the time were removed from the project, or their work was removed from the project. Like this person, Andrew Scott Bell, saying that he scored the entire series. That is almost 4 hours of music that was written for this that was then just completely scrapped and redone. You don't do that for, like, just because you don't like the music. Do you know what I mean? Like, they did that with intent behind it. And I'm wondering if it is because they experienced or were aware of this alleged assault, harassment, workplace, malpractice, hostile work environment situation that was created, allegedly again, on Queer for Fear. So, yeah. I don't know, of that story, because I mean, all the rest of it is, you know, like, a couple of shows that I've never watched or really cared about were canceled, like Welcome to Flatch, which was two seasons on Fox. I know none of you ever watched an episode of that. That got canceled. Some manga on Netflix got renewed for a second season. A show on HBO Max that's a Canadian co-production is going to be canceled after its upcoming season. Like, and then, I mean, the big thing is that Max added sports. That was the other big story. Max, the streaming service, added sports for a limited time, included with all levels. And then if you want to keep it after whatever this limited trial is, it'll be an extra $10 a month. So, like, I'm definitely not fucking doing that. But it's basically, like, it's the same shit that... So they... Whew, catch my breath. Collect your thoughts. It's the same stuff that's airing right now on, like, TBS TNT. So at the moment, it's the Major League Baseball postseason is... on TBS and Warner stations, so you can find that on Max if you are interested and do not have access to cable or but I love some gossip. I love some insider Hollywood shit. So, like, and also I, not that I like Brian Fuller, I don't know Brian Fuller, but I have always seen him as like a genre gay that kind of like broke through and has developed this cult following and this cult personality, which, I mean, it never ends well for these people who have these cult followings, right? You know, like, Joss Whedon, it was my other big one who, you know, we haven't heard from in years because of all these claims against him of, you know, cheating on his wife and what that means about his brand of feminism and, like, retaliating against actors that he didn't like by killing off their characters and... I still am unclear of what exactly happened between him and Ray Fisher on the set of Justice League, but other than Joss Whedon swinging his dick around, which I'm sorry to say is what you do as a Hollywood director, it's literally your job. But yeah, like, it doesn't end well for these cult personalities, I don't think, which I'm, again, learning with this new set of allegations. But I've always enjoyed Brian Fuller as a figure, even though I have almost never liked his output, sorry to say. I liked Pushing Daisies. I hated American Gods. I watched one episode of Hannibal and could not get into it, even though other people were obsessed with it. You couldn't pay me to watch any Star Trek. But I was looking forward to Crystal Lake. Who knows if it'll even still happen after all of this? Plus the writer strike, plus the actor strike. Who knows? Okay, how are we doing on time already? Oh, I've already been talking for way too long. Okay, so keeping with our horror theme, let's go really quickly. The third season of Chucky premiered this past week. I talked about season one when it was on. I really enjoyed season one. I did not so much enjoy season two. I thought it was like too weird and too complicated. It got too much into like the mythos of Tiffany, who, if you've seen the movies from years ago, is Jennifer Tilly, or played by Jennifer Tilly, but now is literally Jennifer Tilly and vice versa. Like, Jennifer Tilly in season two of Chucky was in the body of the doll, and Tiffany, the doll, was in the body of Jennifer Tilly. And then they have a child's doll that was then split into two living people that are twins. It was too complicated. It was confusing sometimes. It was overly complex and didn't need to be. And then, like, the main storyline was... the teenagers from the first season were sent to a Catholic school to like get them set straight, and then Chucky infiltrated it and a nun thought that he was Jesus. Didn't love season two. It wasn't bad, but didn't love it. But the third season, the first episode aired this week. The full episode is streaming for free on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's on Sci-Fi and USA on Wednesdays at 9:00. It's also streaming on Thursdays on Peacock. But if you don't have any of those and still want to watch this, the first episode of season three is on YouTube. So I'll put the link to that in the show notes. But basically, this season is kind of like a reboot of the series, it feels like, in a lot of ways. So if you didn't watch season one or two, you can jump in on season three and only be probably minimally confused. But anything that confuses you, they do a good job of recapping in the previously ons and kind of explaining away during the episode with flashbacks and stuff like that. But the premise of this season basically is that Chucky has infiltrated the White House. At the end of season two, we were led to believe that most of the good guy dolls were done away with, and there is now, once again, only one Chucky. And that Chucky kidnapped the main female protagonist. What is her name? What is her name? Why can't I think of her name? Lexi. Sorry about that. I'm having brain farts throughout this whole recording process. My bad. Lexi's sister, Caroline, and they went off together. And Chucky has been missing for months now. And they have no idea where he is. They haven't heard from him or from the kid's sister. And then he appears again in the White House as a toy named Joseph that belongs to the newly elected president's young son. All of this is absolutely insane, but also so entertaining. So this first episode feels very much like the old school Child's Play movies. The mythos of Chucky got super complicated toward the end of the movies and in the TV show. You know, like I just mentioned the child and the split kids and the swapping of souls and Tiffany, and there was a lot going on by the time we got to Seed of Chucky and then Cult of Chucky, right? This feels simpler, like the beginning Child's Play movies were, that there is a killer doll on the loose and no one can fathom that the doll is the killer. And there are some really fun comedy scenes in this episode, but it does lean more toward thriller and horror than this show had in season two and in a lot of season one and in some of the later Child's Play movies, like I mentioned Seed of Chucky, Bride of Chucky, Cult of Chucky. So this first episode is great. Devon Sawa, everyone's 90s boy crush, is playing another character. This is like his fourth or fifth that he has played. He's playing the president. Last year, he played a priest. The year before, he played a dad and his brother of a character. So he's wonderful. I love him. And he's so hot. Still so hot. I would vote for him if he was running for president too. And it's just, it was a really fun episode. Like, I don't want to give away too much or talk too much about, like there's not a whole lot to say other than if you enjoy any of the Child's Play movies, I highly recommend checking out this first episode of season three. Again, even if you didn't watch season one and two. But if you do want to catch up on season one and two, they are also both streaming on Peacock right now. And there's like been a resurgence in the past couple of weeks, really, of these like legacy horror franchises coming back. Like last week, we had Saw X or Saw 10, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I don't count Jigsaw and Spiral as Saw movies, so I say X, although it is technically the 10th film with those two, which I loved. I thought was great. Exorcist Believer just came out in theaters this past weekend and did big box office numbers, but got shit reviews. Pet Sematary Bloodlines came out on Paramount Plus over the weekend. That was also terrible. And then we have Chucky airing on USA and Sci-Fi and Peacock right now. We had last year the end of the new Halloween trilogy. So the Scream 6 was released earlier this year in theaters. We have 7 coming as soon as the strike is over. So these like legacy horror franchises are back in a really big way. And Chucky, I think, is actually one of the more successful reboots, reimagining, sequels, all of the above, because it is in some ways all of the above, that is out there. And even if you're not like hugely into horror, they're not released, like the show is not that scary. You know, it's on Sci-Fi in USA. It's not dark HBO Stars Cinemax scary. You know what I mean? Like the show would not be rated R. It's like maybe a PG-13. There might be a couple of fucks in it every once in a while. And there's some blood, but not a whole lot. Like it's, again, this episode reminded me a whole lot of the early Child's Play movies where like at one point everyone's in an elevator and the lights go out and there's a dog in the elevator because it's the Secret Service and they have like bomb dogs. And one of the agents gets bitten and he assumes obviously that it was the dog, but then it zooms in when the lights come back on the doll's face. And obviously we know that it was Chucky because we know the doll is possessed. And like that shit I think is really fun. And I also just, I love that it is Don Mancini who created these movies is still involved. He wrote this first episode. He has never gone away from the series, so it is strictly still what he wants it to be, and that's super, that never happens with, again, these legacy franchises. Going back, The Exorcist Believer, there was a thing when the bad reviews came out that William Friedkin, who originated the movie back in the 70s, said that he didn't want to be around to see the guy who did the new Halloween trilogy do the same thing to his franchise, and he did die earlier this year. But Don Mancini continuing to be involved in this and to evolve the story and to always be the one in charge of where it's going is very rare, but, and I think really interesting. And also, talking about queer horror, he is openly gay as well. And so is the main characters on the show are a young teen couple named Jake and Devin. So I really like the show. There you go. That's the long and short of it. The premiere was last week. We're getting 4 episodes, and then it's going on a little bit of a hiatus because they did not finish filming the season before the strikes happened. So who knows when we'll get the second half of the season, but we're getting 4 episodes throughout the month of October, which is the perfect time for a show like this. Now, the other show that's airing on Wednesdays that you're probably more familiar with and maybe watching is American Horror Story. And the new season is on 10 o'clock on Wednesdays on FX and streaming next day on Hulu. And I don't know. I feel like every time I talk about American Horror Story, it's a freaking roller coaster, man. Like, if you remember a couple years ago, I recommended very highly season 10, double feature, which was half of it was about was a story taking place in Provincetown about a pill that if you have like the creative gene will make you a creative genius. If you don't, it turns you into like a hollowed out blood-sucking monster. That was super interesting. And the second half was about aliens in Area 51. Not as interesting, but still fun. I liked that season. I loved last season, NYC. I think I talked about that on the podcast as well, which was a very different kind of horror where it was a very real horror, the horror being AIDS and the government and popular neglect of queer men, women, and people who were in contact with them who contracted HIV and AIDS. And I loved that season. And now we have American Horror Story Delicate, which is currently airing and is back on its bullshit. And has kind of gone back to like the 1984 and Hotel and Roanoke as one of the shit seasons. One of the shit seasons. Not going to sugarcoat it. It's a shit season. And we're only 3 episodes in right now. And this is another one that's split in half. We're getting 5 episodes now. 5 episodes sometime in 2024. Probably early, I would say. I think they finished filming this before the pandemic. Or before the pandemic. Whew! That was a Freudian slip. Before the strikes. And to start off, like, none of the people that you want to see in an American Horror Story, because, you know, he works with the same people on and off throughout, none of the people you want to see are in this season. There's no Jessica Lange, no Kathy Bates, no Tessa Farmiga, no Evan Peters, no Matthew Bomer, no, who else was in some of these seasons that was good? I said Kathy Bates. No Adina Porter. No, Sarah Paulson. How'd I forget Sarah Paulson? Instead, we're getting Emma Roberts, snooze, and Dennis O'Hare, who I do like. And I think they might be the only... Billy Lord, I think, and Leslie Grossman, I think, are coming back at some point. They haven't appeared yet. But other than that, we're not getting any of the usual suspects. No Finn Wittrock. No Lily Rabe. Instead we're getting fucking Kim Kardashian, which is the most bizarre casting ever. And she's fucking terrible. Like, when I think there's, I don't know, and I'm guilty of this sometimes too, that there's a misconception that acting is easy, especially for film and TV, because your performance can be so easily manipulated and crafted by a good director and editing team. And like, this is not related at all, but I'm going to throw it out as an example that, like, I was watching Buying Back My Daughter on Lifetime last night, which is the movie that Ariana Maddox from Vanderpump Rules is in. And it's a small-ish role where she's, like, a police officer. And she was fine. I'm watching it, and I'm like, okay, like, she's fine. This isn't exciting. Like, she's not doing anything really, but... like, she's okay. I get why she wanted to be an actress, but, like, never hit it, is because, like, she's fine. Like, she's not doing anything great, but she's not terrible. And I think it's easy, and I have been guilty of assuming that it is easy to act for film and TV, because, like, just read the lines, and a director can tell you, okay, hit this word, don't hit that word, and just keep filming it until they get what they want, right? But I'm realizing after watching Kim Kardashian, it's not easy. Because she is so, like, I can't imagine how bad this woman must be as an actor that what we are seeing on this show is the best version of what she does. Like, that they could, I have very limited experience on film and TV sets. I've been on a couple, but again, very limited. I was an extra in, like, a shitty indie movie that was filmed in North Jersey when I was in high school. And it was one scene where we were entering a bar and then sitting and watching a band perform. And literally all we had to do was, like, walk into the bar and they filmed us paying a cover. And then we switched, we sat down, we sat at a bar, and they filmed the band walking past us a few different times. And then they played a song that the band pretended to play while they, like, danced on stage. I'm dancing in my chair as if you can see me, like, to illustrate my point. And then they, like, the camera would track up and down all of our reactions. We were sitting in the crowd and, like, you know, grooving to the music or bobbing our heads or smiling or whatever. And that was that. And it amounted to maybe 10 to 15 seconds of film when the film was completed. It's called Requiem for a Vampire. It's fucking wretched. If you can find it, it's terrible, but in a really campy way. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, right. And, like, we filmed that. It took, like, 2 or 3 hours. And it was just those few shots. And this is, like, a shitty indie film, again, where, like, they have limited resources and time and money. And that still took 2 or 3 hours to get through. So I can't imagine that when you have the time and the budget and all of that, that you can film each line as many times as you need to until you get it the way you want it. That the best version is the ones that we are seeing. Because Kim literally talks like this. Where she's just talking in a monotone and it sounds like she's talking through her nose and that she has her lips pursed and it's just one note kind of like this the whole time. And, like, they try to give her jokes and Twitter is fucking losing their minds because over these jokes, and it's stuff like that's Kardashian famous. I have no fucking idea what these things are because I'm a normal ass person who doesn't fucking care about the Kardashians. But apparently there was, like, something where Kendall or Kylie were cutting a cucumber that went viral. And then they had Kim at one point fucking cutting a cucumber. And Twitter's like, ah, crying about it. No, whatever. But the one that I did recognize was Kim's character Siobhan gives Emma Roberts' character Anna a dress to wear to an award show and says, oh, this is the dress that Madonna wore to the Oscars when she sang Sooner or Later. Don't rip it. And that's how she says the line. Don't rip it. Don't rip it. And obviously this is in reference to, I believe it was the Marilyn Monroe dress that Kim Kardashian famously, allegedly, infamously, allegedly ruined. And they're like, that should be a really tongue-in-cheek wink, wink, wink at the camera. Like, don't ruin it. Don't rip it. And it said, don't rip it. Like, she's terrible. Her face does not move. She has no emotions. And what's even wilder is, like, okay, let's talk about this season. This season is based on a book, which they've never done on American Horror Story before. They've never based a season on previous previously existing material, unless you count, like, the Apocalypse season being based on the Coven season or using the Coven season. So this book is called Delicate Condition. It's by Danielle Valentine. It came out in August and I read it before it came out. I had an advanced copy. And this was before I knew that it was the basis for American Horror Story. I just knew that it was a horror novel. And as I mentioned last week, I'm big into horror lately. So I read it without realizing it's part of this, like, genre of mommy horror that's really big right now. Like, think Rosemary's Baby, but 1,000 variations on it. And, you know, like, there's, I don't know, Delicate Condition is one example of it, but then there's also, Mothered by Zuschka Stage, Just Like Mother by Anne Hertzel, Mother Thing by, what's her name, Ainsley Hogarth. I've read a bunch of them lately. The Push by Ashley Audrain, Baby Teeth also by Zuschka Stage. I think that's how you say her first name. I think that's how you say her last name. Anyway, there's a lot of horror right now that's like body horror about pregnancy. That's like the horror about mother-daughter relationships. The horror that literally is pregnancy. Oh, that was the other one by R.J. Heron. Baby something. Baby like something baby. I like that one. I can't remember the name of it. I read it like last year or the year before. Anyway, sorry. The horrors of being pregnant, that there's like body horror involved. And then just in general, like, kids are terrifying. Having children is terrifying. That the like unbearable love of a parent and a child is horrible, is horrifying. And then, you know, when you strain that relationship, how horrifying that can be, blah, 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 blah. So this is like another entry into like that type of genre, which is not my favorite. So I did not love the book. And then on top of it, the book is so fucking long and goes on and on and on about, like, it's about a woman who's pregnant. Her name is Anna Victoria Alcott. She's an actress and she's really hitting it big. And while she's trying to have this baby through IV and IVF and all these like complicated procedures, and it's not taking, and she's miscarrying a lot. And then she has a miscarriage that she thinks is induced by a woman who's stalking her. But then when they tell her the baby is dead, she thinks it's still alive. And that's basically like the whole premise of this book, is her thinking like, am I pregnant with a demon or an alien? Am I crazy? Am I slowly losing my mind? That's the whole book. And so far, that's the whole damn TV series too. So I don't know if they're going to deviate at some point, which I kind of hope they do, because the book was, again, very long and very boring and very repetitive. And the ending was trash. I hated the ending. But going back to Kim Kardashian, the character she's playing is a major character in the book. And I'm going to leave it at that to avoid major spoilers. But she is a very prominently featured character. And she needs to not be terrible in order to fulfill the promise of her character. So casting her in this role is super fucking strange to me. And I don't really understand it, especially when there are dozens and dozens and dozens of very talented actors of the same age and beauty within the Ryan Murphy stable that could have been used. Or, I don't know, thousands upon millions of other young actresses who would have loved their big break playing this part. And instead, we're getting Kim Kardashian. And I don't know if it's because the last couple seasons haven't been well viewed and they want the ratings and the press of having Kim in it. I don't fucking know, but she's absolutely terrible. And the whole tone is just super slow. Super weird. It's, like I said, it's very slow. It is not scary at all. The promos have all this like spider imagery and Black Widow imagery that has not come into play yet. And we're 3 episodes in, and having read the book, I don't know how the fuck they're going to make that come into play. And it's basically like, this is a whole book and story that's about paranoia. And for me, that is never going to be interesting enough to sustain itself over like 10 hours of television, or going back to Delicate Condition, the book, over the course of a 400 page book. Like, that is, it's just not my jam. It's just not. And as talented as a lot of the people in this cast are, like, the 3rd episode introduced Michaela J. Rodriguez, formerly MJ Rodriguez from Pose, as a very minor character, but I loved seeing her again. Matt Shukri, I don't know if that's how you say his name, who was just on The Resident, he's playing the husband. He's cast well. I don't think he's doing all that much, but he was cast well. I think Billy Lord and Leslie Grossman are coming back at some point. Zachary Quinto had a really quick cameo as himself in the 1st or 2nd episode. Andy Cohen had a really fun cameo as himself in the 1st episode. So there are fun things, but this season, it's not good at all. It is so boring. It is so over the top. It is so slow. And Like, sometimes American Horror Story needs to know when to say when. And it just feels super strange that they're just, that they're basing this on a book, first of all. They're basing it on this book, second of all. And that they made these, like, weird casting choices, that this of all seasons, this one's going to be split into two halves. It's just, it's so weird. Last episode in a month, that it was two episodes a week for a month. And I guess that didn't work too great. So now they're trying this where they're splitting it, but like, it just doesn't make sense with what this story is and with the level of excitement that it's bringing to do that. And I don't know, it's just, it's not all that visually interesting to me. I don't know. I don't know if that's, if they're not hiring great directors or the right directors, if it's the TV, the show itself, if it's the source material, if it's the story, if it's the acting, if it's all of the above, like, this is just not interesting to me. And I don't know, like, the pilot was, the first episode was directed by Jessica Yu, who has made a lot of TV, and even with Ryan Murphy, but like, nothing like an American Horror Story. She did like an episode of This Is Us and the pilot of Walker on CW, the Walker Texas Ranger remake, and an episode of Ratched, which is Ryan Murphy, but okay, that's the only thing similar. You know, she's done like Fosse Verdon, the what else, 13 Reasons Why. I looked this all up beforehand. Like, she's done a bunch of stuff and some good stuff, but nothing that is in this lane. So like, maybe that's adding to it, plus the Kim Kardashian of it all, plus the fact that I cannot at all connect with the mommy horror of it. I don't know. Maybe this season just isn't for me, and that's okay too. I don't know. But like, the first week, it got 500,000 viewers, and the second week, it lost 2/3 of that. So clearly I'm not the only one who checked out immediately after like the curiosity watch. So I don't know. We get, there's two more episodes airing this month, this week, and then next week is the finale of the first half, and then again we're getting the next five episodes sometime later. I don't, if you are watching it and enjoying it, please tell me how and why. And if you're not, definitely tell me, because I would love to shit talk this with somebody. Because it's the American Horror Story way, right? It draws us in, it has a fun idea, it has one good episode, and then it slowly falls apart. This didn't even have that. And again, it might be because I know what's supposed to happen based on the book, and maybe they'll deviate, again, kind of hoping they do, because I hated the ending of the book. But so far, they're playing it very close to the book, like very close. So I don't see that happening. But then again, I also don't know how the hell they're going to get 10 episodes out of the book. So maybe the book will be the first five episodes and then some shit will go down for the second half. I don't know. But I hope they surprise me at some point, because this shit is not it. This is not it. And then on top of it, the week of the premiere, Angelica Ross, who was on a couple of seasons, she was in one of the leads in 1984, and then she was also in Double Feature. And she was a recurring character, Candy, on Pose. She's a black trans woman. She did this whole Insta Live thing talking about how much of a manipulator Ryan Murphy is, and that he had her on hold for so many years, and said he wanted to make this season of American Horror Story with her and Gabby Sidibe and somebody else, Kiki Palmer and maybe someone else, that was like black-led, and she wanted to be producer, and he had this idea and he was going to bring her in on it, and then just never brought it up again for years and just ghosted her, stopped replying to emails. She never got a part on season 11, even though she was in first position, meaning that she could not take other jobs until she found out what was happening with American Horror Story. And she alleges that that cost her a role in the Marvel universe, whether it be on TV or movie, I don't know. And basically she was, and then she accused Emma Roberts of being transphobic. And I, based on what we know about Emma Roberts, completely believe the story of being on the set of 1984 and someone being like, okay, ladies, get back to work or whatever. And Emma Roberts looking like, don't you mean lady? And walking away, like making a comment about how Angelica is trans, so is therefore not a lady? Gross. And, you know, just like, there are stories of Emma Roberts being verbally and physically abusive. Go do a little deep dive. Go ahead and Google Emma Roberts controversy. See what comes up. Anyway, so like, that's also hanging over this season. So that feels really gross and kind of jives with what Janet Mock did maybe last year or 2 years ago at the premiere of the final season of Pose when she had like what seemed like a very public meltdown, yelling at Brian Murphy at Lincoln Center, and we haven't heard from her since then. Look what happened to her. And I guess Angelica was on her side because of all the shit that happened prior to that. And it's wild. And it ended with Angelica Ross being like, I'm quitting acting. I'm moving back to Georgia and I'm going to go into politics. Wild. So that's also hanging over this season. So this is just a weird fucking season of American Horror Story. And yeah, it's also not good. It's weird. It's weird. And it's also not good. So meh. Okay. My recommendation for the week. New show on NBC. I really enjoyed it. There's been one episode. It premiered last Tuesday. It's called Found. It's on Tuesdays at 10 on NBC, and then it's streaming on Wednesdays on Peacock and on demand and all that other shit. And it is a procedural. So like it's, you know, like the way that Law and Order is, where there's a new story, case of the week type thing. But it has elements of Scandal, the TV show, in it that I really like. And it also has elements of like The Silence of the Lambs, which I really like. And it was better than I expected. Like, I watched it because there's nothing else on, and Mark Paul Gosselaar, Zach Morris, is in it, and I fucking love him. I will watch him in anything. And there's a twist at the end. That's not really all that much of a twist anymore because it's been in all the commercials now. That I really enjoyed, and that kind of made this whole thing a little more interesting than just kind of your run-of-the-mill procedural. So it's about Gabby Mosley, who is played by Shanola Hampton, who I'm unfamiliar with but was on Shameless on Showtime, so she may be more familiar to you. She played Veronica. And Gabby is a former kidnapping victim. She was kidnapped as a teenager, I want to say, and held captive by a man that she called Sir, and no one came for her. And she was held with another younger girl, and they formed a sisterly bond, and no one came for them, and they helped themselves, they escaped. When she got older, she manages a firm that specializes in finding missing people who kind of, as she says, falls through the cracks. The ones the police don't care about, aka the non-white, non-straight ones. And this first episode is about the dual kidnappings of a white senator's child and a black teen girl. And it plays into a lot of like the stereotypes that the police assume about young missing people, where if you are a young white girl, you are covered by the mainstream media and the media in general and social media, that your hashtag find whoever is trending on Twitter, that your face is all over the news on posters, in that everyone knows your name, that you are going to be found. But if you are black, you are assumed to be a runaway, or that you had a fight and you'll come back. And then by the time that they say like, oh, they're a runaway, give it 72 hours. And by then, as you know, if you ever heard of the show, the first 48 or 48 hours, the most crucial period to find someone has passed, and the likelihood of ever that person ever being found alive is completely out the window. So it touches on a lot of that. And she also we're given hints that she can kind of tap into the minds of kidnappers and understand why they do what they do, and then can predict maybe where people are. And she has a team that works for her. And one is Lacey, who is the girl that she was kidnapped with, who she is in law school and works as a legal assistant. Then there's like a tech expert who's agoraphobic. There is a woman whose son was missing, who's a lead investigator. And they all kind of work together with sometimes a missing persons detective in DC and her as her police liaison to find these missing kids. So that's the overall premise. You can see kind of like, you know, what she's very much like Olivia Pope. She heads this firm. She's the PR person. She puts herself on TV. She has a famous past, so she's known, all that kind of good stuff. And then we find out at the end of the episode, again, this is a minor spoiler considering it's been in all the commercials. So if you want to watch it, I recommend it, but don't want to know the end of the first episode, just skip ahead 15 seconds. We find out that the guy who kidnapped her, Sir, she has kidnapped and is holding captive in her basement. And he is helping her find these kids by like helping her get inside the minds of these kidnappers, which is a again, Silence of the Lambs type trope. So that was really fun and a really great twist, I guess. Like, it's not really a, I don't know. It's, again, it's not really a twist because they kind of show it in the commercials, but it is an interesting turn of events that kind of reframes everything and makes you think about the show in a different way, and also makes the show, I think, more interesting and what's the word I'm looking for? It's more like I'm more, it left me wanting to come back. Do you know what I mean? Typically with procedurals, it's like if you like an actor on the show, you're gonna watch it again. Like, that's how I fell into watching Blue Bloods and have been watching it for however many years it's been on the air, 13, 14 years, something like that, is because I love Donnie Wahlberg. That's how that started. Donnie Wahlberg was on it. I watched the first episode. I didn't hate it, so I kept watching it. And that there you go. But, like, for this one, there is a twist on the procedural format that makes me want to come back. So that is our recommendation for the week. You only missed one episode, only have one to catch up on before the next one airs tomorrow, Tuesday, the 11th at 10 o'clock on NBC. And also streaming now on Peacock. Okay, that'll do it for me this week. I'll be back next week, I think, with more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a great week, everyone.